Not had enough of me yet? Well, good news. You can now listen to William Hill's Upfront with Simon Jordan podcast right here. The series, hosted by me, gives you a front row seat to big name interviews discussing their career successes and failures. Sit back and enjoy.
When it comes to alcohol, like, one's too many for me, and a thousand's not enough.
Was it like that during your career?
This is after my career. This is when nobody's phoning me up to go to gym anymore. This is when I feel like my life's ending, it's like I've died. Probably realistically, I'd prefer to fight Chris Eubank.
Would you?
I just don't like him. Honestly, I dislike him more than Amir Khan.
You go in against Crawford. I mean, I'll be blunt, Kel. Is this levels? I'm being blunt, right, and you might not like
not
it.
Not levels at all.
Because this is a one-sided fight.
You tell me how you think it's one-sided. I think if I don't want to found boxing, I'd definitely be, you know, dead or in prison.
This is Upfront with me, Simon Jordan. I believe there are a lot of vacuous, uninformed, unchallenged opinions out there. I want to get to the bottom line and cut through the nonsense. So with this podcast with William Hill, I'm going to get people with strong views who think they can stand them up to proper scrutiny. There's a good chance I might learn something along the way. And more importantly, so might you. Joining me in today's episode, a boxer from the Steel City who headed stateside to become IBF World Welterweight Champion. A 43-fight career that included stabbings, promoter splits and broken eye sockets, before ending in emphatic fashion as he put to bed his infamous long-running rivalry with Amir Khan. The Special K, Kell Brook, welcome to Upfront.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. Listen, in these shows, Kell, what we try to do very quickly is establish the background to fighters, because I'm always fascinated by fighting. My background is obviously is football, but I'm fascinated by fighters because there's a very different mentality and the motivation that creates a fighter. So what's your story?
Pretty naughty, very naughty kid, you know, at school, very hyperactive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, non-stop, I couldn't sit still. I think what got me into boxing was like Bruce Lee,
okay.
Jean-Claude Van Damme,
right.
You know. Jackie Chan, I was like constantly watching their films and I was like kung fuing and chucking right. punches at Seti.
Any sporting background from your family?
Not really. Not like my uncles used to box when they were younger. But, you know, just had a few fights and fell off really. It's only been me really what's gone on and done what I've done.
Right.
So, you know, from that young age, my dad seen something in me, you know, that could punch really hard, and I were very, you know, hyperactive, and I just had that twinkle in my eye, he said. And he took me down to Brendan Ingalls,
yep.
down at Winkerbank.
Not just any gym, but Brendan Ingalls gym. Yeah.
Any gym, yeah. So he took me down to the gym, and I remember first walking in and just seeing everyone sparring and sweating and punching bags. And I just, as soon as I walked in, I just knew that.
How old were you?
I were nine.
Nine.
I were 9 year old when I first went in. And Princess Ian were there,
mm-hmm.
Ryan Rose, Johnny Nelson,
mm-hmm.
and all these fighters. So, you know, so as I walked in, you know, I just knew that this was for me.
No other sports at all?
No other sports. I've not been into any other sports, to be fair. Like, never been into football, never liked a little bit of basketball, but no, nothing. It was always, you know, like punching people in the face, basically, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think fuels a fighter in terms of, I would in an ignorant way suggest that into going into the hurt business, you've got to come from a position of some form of anger or some form of resentment or some form of desire to get out from underneath. I mean, you talked about being a naughty kid and you've talked about in the background of your life, and I'm skipping forward a little bit, but I'll come back to my point about a lot of the company that you kept and where they found themselves. So was anger, resentment, desire to get out from underneath part of the fuel? And also, did it, by going into boxing, did it save you from going down a pathway that a lot of your mates went down?
100%, yeah. I think if I don't want to found boxing, I'd definitely be, you know, dead or in prison, you know, because, you know, from where I'm from, obviously, it's, you know, that's what, you know, you're product to your own environment. And
but are you a follower?
I think that's what I've seen. That's what, you know, close people around me, what they did, and you know, it's something what you just fall into.
But again, I mean, I'm posing you a quite pointed question. But are you a follower or are you a leader? Because other people do things. Do you necessarily do it too?
I think that I'd be the leader in what I were doing. Yeah, but
you'd cause the most trouble.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
But I think that I would have gone down the line of, you know, being a bad boy.
But there is a unique psyche that you guys have. I've sat here listening to Carl Froch talk to me about the motivations that got him on a ring and what he wanted to do to George Groves and how he overcame his nerves and fear, and Johnny Nelson, how he overcame the embarrassment. Yeah. And Ricky Hatton, how he wanted to produce certain outcomes for himself. And Billy Joe Saunders, that started from a position of, I am going to be the best in the world. There's no two ways about it. I'm not living in a caravan with a broken window. Was yours along those lines? And was it fueled by the necessity to get out from underneath? I know I'm repackaging the same question.
Yeah.
But I want to get some understanding of your psyche.
I think I just, you know, with especially the passion I had for boxing. Like, with anything, playing snooker, like, table tennis, darts, I'm very competitive. I always want to win. Like, I'm a bad loser. I need to win.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just, like, you know, I love my dad, you know, and he's always said from a very young age that I'd become world champion.
Right.
You know.
This is Terry, right?
Yeah, Terry.
Yeah.
So.
Who came into your life when you were 1 year old? 1 year old.
1 year old. Yeah.
And you consider him to be your father?
He's, yeah, my father. He's, me and him have gone through Frank Warren, every different promoter.
Yep.
He's always been
a constant.
We've been side by side through all my career and all my life outside boxing. So, you know, he's like...
Would he have not kept you off the... Would he have not kept you on a straight and narrow as well?
Yeah. No, he would have. And he has done, you know, in my career. He's got me out of some sticky situations. But, you know, like, I look up to him so much, you know, and from a young age, like I said, he's always said that I'm going to be world champion.
Right.
And...
Did you believe that?
And I really believe what he said, 100 million.
Did you believe it because he said it, or did you believe it because you believed it?
I believed it because he said it at first initially. Right. So, but then obviously, like, people also I looked up to in the gym, like Naz Ryan, Brendan Ingalls, you know, saying that, all singing from the same hymn sheet, saying that, you know, I'm going to go down and be one at best what's come out of, you know, Sheffield and go all the way, you know, and I started getting older, winning, you know, national championships.
36 amateur fights.
Yeah.
31 wins, 2 ABAs, yeah?
You've done your research. That's
absolutely.
Right. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Brendan Ingle, over the years, has become very influential, and lots of people associating with Naz, associating with Johnny Nelson. The influence he had on you?
It's unbelievable, everything he said, you know, I did. Brendan, he would just... He's like a prophet, you know, he's like, he's done so much for the community and he's got so much respect, you know. He's a special man, Brendan.
What's he done for the community? You mean taking young just kids like you and giving you an opportunity?
Like, yeah, even me, I would know at school, the time he's put into me in the gym, I were getting better. I've never been the brightest, but, you know, the school grades, terrible.
You and me both.
But, like, the teachable coming up to him, you know, getting in touch with Brendan saying he's doing a lot better at school. And, you know, because he spent this time with me, and his old man Brendan used to take me after the gym. We used to go to steam and sauna and he used to just talk to me. They were the same stories, but he used to just spend...
Yeah, invest time.
He used to put classical music on.
Yeah.
And drive to steam and sauna and just talk to me, you know, for hours and spend lots of time with me. You know, I think without him... Like I said, I don't know what I would have been doing.
I hear the same story from all the boys that have worked with him, and you know, obviously Johnny Nelson talked about the participation in going to local prisons and fighting the fighters fighting with the guys in prisons that were boxers and that wanted to be boxers, and going in there with Nazim Hamid and going in there with Herbie Hyde and going in there with Johnny Nelson. Did you get involved in any of that?
I've seen Johnny Nelson put one at convicts down.
He's told me. Yeah, well, he wasn't supposed to. He was supposed to just drop his hands and let him do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You become a pro. You sign with Frank, which seems to be a lot of young fighters start off with Frank, and we'll get to Frank Warren and your relationship with him. It seems to me that it takes a lot of fights to get you into certain spaces and places. And it seems to me that there's an interesting... I mean, this might be me overanalyzing, but I'll throw it at you and you can see what you think. When I looked at your record... 28 fights gets you to Carson Jones, right? And that to me, and you're going to go, how dare you, but I'm going to say it, that to me looks like the first recognisable name of any real merit, besides the British belt that you won against Barry Jones, right? But on the world stage, right? Mm. And it seems to me the first 16 or 17 fights you have are all 6-round or 8-round fights. you have a 50% stoppage record in those fights. Yet when you go to the 12 rounds after that for the next 10 fights, you're knocking everybody out. My point in all of that is it seems to me that your career goes in fits and starts in terms of 16 fights seems a lot of fights for you to be fighting at six rounders.
You're bang right.
So why did that happen?
It's probably the way Frank Warren did it. You know, just I was fighting these journeymen for way too long. You know, I wanted to have these tests, but it just, that's how it, I wanted the bigger fights. I didn't want to be fighting these fights. What don't come to win, they come to survive.
Yeah.
And like you said, the stoppages started coming when I was fighting people winning records. Mm-hmm. The better the opponent, the better I am. And you get the stoppages, the knockouts, what I got. So.
But why did they take so long?
I don't know. I think it maybe stop. Well, whatever happened in my career, like, you know, injury, like, I don't know. It could be anything. Like, I might have not boxed for a while, or they might have just filled the show up, or, you know, I ended up just fighting these journeymen way too long. Like you said, I should have been fighting real fights a lot earlier.
But that sort of flies in the face of, and I'm not making an observation, but there's a reputation that goes with Frank Warren about being a particularly good matchmaker.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the polar opposite of it. What, again, you're there, and the only way I can understand it, because I'm looking at your record going, it takes him 16, 17 fights to get a British title shot, right? He's fighting at six-round fights. It takes him 28 fights to get to someone like Carson Jones. And then it takes him 30 fights to get a world title shot. And this seems to me to be an inordinate amount of time with a very talented individual that promoters want to make money from.
Mm.
So why are you appearing to look like you're being held back or marginalised when you're a talent?
The fact is, I wanted them big fights. Believe you me.
Piss you off looking
it
back on
it? It does piss me off, yeah, because I wanted the big fights. I didn't want to be fighting however many fights you said before I boxed for British title. I wanted them way before. They were me and, I think, some at Doherty at the time. I wanted the big fights, you know, but I had to get in there, a young kid and whoever in front of me, that's what I thought.
Because it feels like it shapes the perception of you. You're not operating at the highest level and that you're not a superstar. And it's an interesting one because other people refer to you that at a later stage. But I wonder, Kel, if instances in your life that changed the direction. At 21 years of age, you're getting yourself involved in an altercation where you're getting stabbed. And those sort of things bring a perspective and a focus on somebody. What's going on around you in your life where you, as a prize fighter, are involved in altercations where, you know, it's not the first time it happens. It happens later on in your career, and we'll touch there. And these might be subjects that irritate you, but they're part of the backstory that go with you, so you're going to have to answer them or bat them away as you see fit. But at 21 years of age, you're with the country's probably leading promoter, Frank Warren. We're debating how long it's taking you to get to fights, but you're getting yourself into scenarios where you're getting stabbed. And it makes me wonder, and there's no criticism implied here about the people in your life, but are you getting the right people around you and the right advice and the right guidance to make sure that all of this opportunity that was inevitably going to come your way wasn't pissed away by getting yourself involved in things that didn't need to, for you to be involved in?
Of course I didn't. You know, I was a young kid. I was still...
21's old enough.
I don't know. You're still young and dumb, and I've still got the friends what I went to school with, what are from, what are council estate, you know, and you... And you still knock about together, and there's problems where we're going out and things happen from where I'm from that kind of thing can happen, you know. Mm. But you knowing me, like, you know, I'm not one to cause trouble or to be. It just finds you.
It just found me,
you know. Mm. I mean, I don't like we are going into it because then you have to talk about like the person who it should have happened to and. Mm. Mentioning names and stuff like that, but...
No, I don't need you to do
that. We don't need to, you know, it was just, like, wrong place, wrong time, and, you know, it happened, you know, and there's obviously things like that what are stop starting your career, you know, there's many things what happen. You just see fighters turn up for a fight, but you don't know what happens in training and what happens, you know, behind closed doors.
What's your fixation with Amir Khan? I mean, it seems to be a constant theme. And The allegation is, and I'm sure there's two versions to it, that you don't get included in the Olympics, he does. And then of course, in future times, he tells you about a schools you're in sparring and you've got a different view on it. But you seem to have this relationship where you chase Amir Khan for years and years and years. Does the fixation start with...
It's probably how it looks.
2003?
You know, everybody does put... Everyone mentioning my name and his name.
You mentioning it. You mention it a lot. Yeah, not everyone else.
But everyone's mentioning they want to see this fight with me and him. You know, so I'm into a corner where I've got to mention it back, because why can't this fight happen, you know, many years before it did happen? You know, I've never been fixated on him or jealous.
You were calling that in 2012.
Whenever he's boxed away, you know, as a Brit, I want him to go out and win. I don't ever want him to lose. Or it's just that the way that with the Olympics and our Frank Warren put him on a pedestal, and I used to be on these shows, same shows, and I'd be at the bottom of the below. I wouldn't even have I could just be like warming up and be chucked out at any point, or when everyone's left, I'd be last one on, you know. And he's always had that push more than me, and the easy road where I've had to get myself up the rankings and do it the hard way, the proper way.
Do you think that the Olympics gave him a bit of advantage? Because when you come back from the Olympics, he came back with a silver, not a gold. Ben Whittaker came back with silver. He wanted to throw it in the bin, right?
Yeah.
Amir Khan came back with a silver and was lauded and applauded. Do you think that's what gave him a kickstart? Because you're both signed for the same promoter at roughly the same time, right?
Of course it didn't get him that push, you know, to go out. You were a young guy, got a silver, and they had a rematch. Frank did that, and he ended up beating the guy who beat him in the amateurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, like of course, you put on that pedestal like Billy Joe Saunders, James DeGale, Frankie Gavin.
Anthony Joshua.
Yeah. You get that momentum, get, you know, you're the flavour.
Did you resent the fact that he was getting all the attention from a promoter that's supposed to be looking after your career? Does that fuel some of the attitude and outlook that you seem to develop between one another over the years?
I think it probably, it has. You know, Frank Warren signed me up, and he promised me when he did sign me up that me and him would branch off and we would meet, a bit like DeGale and George Groves, you know, that British title level, you know, instead of it never happening. And so it's just gone on and on and on, and it's a fight, and just with his comments saying that it's me what didn't want the fight, and he's saying even with the sparring and stuff, even after the fight, what we just had, he said he can't even remember what happened, you know. I don't know if you've seen that. But it's a fight that should have happened. It's been kept away from the fans for many years. But
we had it in the end.
We had it.
And we'll talk about that fight in specifics. You split from Frank in 2011. Right? From your side of the equation, what was behind your motivations for splitting with Frank?
I think it was at the time I was training with Dave Caldwell.
Right.
And
I like Dave, he's a good lad.
Dave Caldwell, and I think Frank had a bit of a problem because David A started this thing up with Satanta.
Okay, Satanta, the broadcaster, yeah.
The broadcaster. Yeah. And I think Frank said to me that, you know, he wanted me to leave Dave.
He wanted you to leave Dave?
Leave Dave and go back with Brendan, you know. And and basically the reason why I left Brendan in the first place is because he said the same thing there. Like, I've got all these promoters, like, and Frank were the man. Frank were like the Eddie Earn, let's say, of, you know, the promoters, you know, back then.
At that time.
Right. You know, and
the money. We'll be delighted to hear that he was the Eddie Hearn of the time.
But I'm saying, you know,
he was the biggest promoter at the time.
Obviously, he had a problem with, like, Dominic and, I think Brendan, you know, with the situation with Naz back before Frank Warren, and basically to favour my career, I needed to leave.
Would it be a surprise to you that my understanding of the situation is that you wanted to fight Manny Pacquiao?
Yeah.
And Frank did not feel that at that stage in your development, 2011, what would you have been in 2011, 25?
Yeah.
Right? And the level that you'd been fighting at, that the fight for you that was right for you, given the fact he's fighting Marquez, he's fighting Bradley, he's fighting Keith Thurman, he's at that level, and you're building up to that level, that he didn't want you to have that fight?
Probably it would have been right to do so, yeah. But there's more into it than you've just said. It
was, but like, that's what he thinks, because I asked him.
No, it was just to extend contracts. You know how things can get, and it was just like, that was the way of getting out of it, because we're getting promised. It weren't just Manny Pacquiao. There were fights before, and there were, I know what you're saying.
But do you think he was right at that time?
Yeah,
steer you away from fighting Pacquiao.
Manny Pacquiao were like more in his prime there, or a young fighter who's not really. Yeah. I've not boxed
at that level, anywhere near that level.
So yeah, but it's not. That's not how it's gone. That's not how it were.
You sign with Eddie Hearn, and Eddie at the time talks about oozing class and going to be a superstar. What made you sign with Eddie? What was the motivation to go with Eddie? Because he can sell you a good pitch, you a good woo. What was the closing part of saying Eddie Hearn, he's the one? Because at the time, Matchroom were coming of age.
Yeah, coming of. They didn't have many fights. They got promised to promote me and to have me at fighting regular and to build me the fire. You know,
he doesn't get your world title fight for 3 years.
He didn't get me a world title fight for 3 years, but yeah.
So what was the difference between the two camps then? So you're coming out of Frank, and you're going into Eddie, and you've been told by Eddie. Was it Kel, because Eddie said that you're going to be his number one? He's going to give you top billing, top priority, going to make you feel $1 million.
There were many parts, of course, that would have been a part of the reason, but just to be promoted, get me fighting regular in Sheffield, build me up. You know, before, when I was with Frank Warren, you know, like, I weren't really known. Eddie Hearn made me a star, you know. We sold arenas out, you know. Before that, I'd fought with Frank, and, you know, the support, I weren't really known. You know, he promoted me, he built me the fighter, and got me to be a superstar.
Can there be any reason in your mind's eye why someone that's as commercially motivated by Frank Warren would want to almost hide your light under a bushel? Do you understand what I mean by that? Keep you in the background, because...
I don't understand it, yeah.
I don't understand.
I don't understand why he did that, or why he did that.
I don't know if he's got
these fighters. I don't know if, because Eddie just had me. There were me, Darren Barker, and Froch, and he could just concentrate on how to get me out there, promote me in the best way he did.
Did either you or your father?
And maybe Frank didn't believe in me. Maybe he didn't believe in me. Where it was like, maybe, you know, doing nothing.
Did you get that impression at all?
I did. You know,
you did.
I did. I didn't feel like. There definitely weren't that connection what me and Eddie's got. Not at all.
Did you, either you or Dad, pull up Frank and say, well, what's going on here?
We didn't know any different, you know. We were young, green, like,
right.
We're learning a trade. Yeah. You know, we didn't really know.
So, you sign with Eddie, you fight Sean Porter. Tell me about that experience of going in there, beating a world champion in his own back garden in America, also without getting perhaps the attention that you should have got.
That was the best I've ever felt in my entire life, you know, in boxing, in my life.
Yep.
You know, because he was being billed as the next Mike Tyson, did Sean Porter.
Yep.
Knocking Paul Malignaggi out in his fight. I watched it in Vegas thinking, I'm fighting this guy next. You know, and people, everyone had me out not to win that fight. Mm-hmm. It was like all them years, I don't know, it's like all them years, my dad telling me I'd be world champion, and I just knew before
this was it.
This was it.
Yeah.
And that feeling, you know, going 12 rounds in America, all my family there, my mum never seen me fight. She come down.
Never seen you fight before?
She never seen me fight. You know, she was there, and it blew my mind. It blew my mind, obviously, hearing and the new, you know, being there with the people that love me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's with the ups and downs in boxing, eventually getting to that moment and becoming world champion.
But what's the build-up like for you when you're landing in a space where you're fighting for the world title? Not the after result, but the build-up and the expectation on you and the pressure that you put on yourself. Because this is your moment. This is where the ambition comes to meet the opportunity. What's that like? Because people can't relate to someone going in to fight for a world title.
Every single second of the day, it's on your mind.
Yeah.
You know, it's the last thing you think about at night. It's the first thing you wake up to in the morning.
From a nervous point of view,
am I good enough? Am I really good enough?
Yeah.
You know, really, like, because am I really good enough? Like, I'm here now, I'm fighting the best in the world. You know, am I really good enough? You know, this is what, these are all the questions you're asking yourself. You're only a human being and you're away with your own thoughts and the pressure just
builds up.
You know,
how does nerves manifest itself for you? Did you become irascible, bad-tempered? Or does it make you withdrawn? What does it do? What did it do for you when you're coming into this monumental fight?
I just go quiet, you know, really, right. really quiet, and just like just in my own thoughts. There, as the hours, it's like only way I can describe it probably is like the people who are going to get killed on death row. You know,
towards the gallows,
walking through to your final breath.
That's lethal injection,
Lethal injection. That's what that's the only way I could describe it. Right. What they're feeling, all that.
Is that a feeling of dread then? Is it feeling of dread?
Like, yeah, it's like it's like the unknown.
It's not fear though, is it? You're not frightened of going in.
It's fear. It's every it's a lot of emotion. It's fear of losing. I'm not fear about getting hurt. Fear of losing.
Right.
Never getting hurt, getting anything like that. It's the fear of losing, like, and because I want to win so much, and I've lost that many times in my head as well. You know, just like it's just a battle.
You've been role playing this in your mind.
I've role played this fight in my mind thousands of times. So,
and you lost it.
I've lost it in my mind. I've won it. It's like,
right.
You know, I can so many things. Honestly, it's. But obviously, like, I've never really boxed in America. Then I'm flying to Las Vegas, climatizing, doing 2 weeks out there, and then flying to LA. And you know, I'm like faced with promoter Oscar De La Hoya. I think I'm on the big stage. This is because I've always boxed in Britain. It's like I've arrived. I'm good enough. And then we're finally here. You know, I remember looking at him opposite him, the ref. You know, there's me, the referee, and Sean Porter. And I'm looking, thinking, that's the fastest fight I've ever had in my life.
Right, because it's gone black and blur.
It's just gone like a blur.
But when you're looking at Kostin for the first bell, what are you thinking? What's happening in your head?
So in my head, I'm thinking, this bell's going to go now.
Right.
And this is it. This is it, Kel. This is what you've... This is what the dream... This is what it's been about since you've been 9 years old. This is what everyone's been talking about. This is it. This is the world title fight. And in your ear, you've arrived. Let's see.
And I'm going to do everything I have to do.
I'm going to do absolutely everything. I'm so focused, so tunneled in, you know, to obviously go out and do what I did.
When you win, obviously I saw the euphoria. Did you expect now, this is it, lights, camera, action, this is it now, I've won the world title, I'm going to get all the opportunities and all the recognition that I deserve. Did it feel like this is the beginning of something?
This is what I just thought I'd keep it safe.
Yeah,
this is it. This is where a big door comes.
Yeah.
This is where a big fight, Keith Thurman. These are all big fights I'm going to get. I'm world champion. They all want to fight me now.
Yeah.
In my head, this is what's going to be happening. Of course, that's what I believe. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And did you automatically? Is there a switch that goes on in your head? Because Barry McGuigan said there was when he became world title champ. When he won the world title, you feel like you're a world champion now.
Yeah, I did.
Chris Billiam Smith said it the other day. I feel like a world champ. I'm not comparing.
I totally get what Barry McGuigan said there, because when I become world champion, I think you know that you deserve to be where you are. It's something like, I totally get that, what you've just said.
Did it change you anyway?
As in what? As in
becoming big time or getting carried away with yourself actually. Confirming what you already knew.
Confirm already I knew. You know what I mean? I didn't change as a person. You know, you see some fighters where they become world champion and goes to their head and they start being a completely different person.
Mm.
But I just felt that I belong and I deserve to be world champion. And I just had a feeling of, I walk in like I'm on air, you know, I am. And I thought, am I good enough? I know that I am.
You now are.
I now am.
Okay, you're now the IBF World Welterweight Champion. You've got, by your own words, the potential keys to the safe, the opportunities, and you get yourself in another situation. And you get yourself in a potentially life-threatening situation.
Yeah.
Have you done that, Kel? I mean, you're not 21 now.
I'm not 21.
You're 26, 27 years of age. 28 years of age. You're now a world champion. You've now got profile. You've now got all your dreams. What are you doing getting yourself involved in a fucking fight in Spain? Or wherever you were?
In Tenerife.
In Tenerife.
With my daughter, my missus who's pregnant, Linda.
Yeah.
It's just that, like I say, you don't know what's going through somebody's mind, you know.
Like your mind? You're the one that's putting yourself in this situation.
I'm putting myself in a situation where I'm around drinking drugs.
As a professional sportsman, as a world champion?
Yeah.
Why?
It's just that that's just how it happened, you know. There's obviously with a younger generation, there's people drinking and after parties, you know, they take drugs.
But you're a superstar.
I'm a superstar.
Oh, on the cusp of being one. You're a world champion. Everything you wanted.
I'm a world champion. I've always been. I'm still that council kid.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still a council kid. I'm a world champion. But that's what I am.
Right. I'm just trying to understand what's going on in your head because it's interesting because people don't get to hear what's going on in other people's heads. And I'm not poking at it because I want to make you look small. I'm poking at it to understand why you put yourself in that position. And you say, well, you take the boy out of council states, but you never take the council state out of the boy.
Like when it comes to alcohol, like one's too many for me.
Right.
And 1,000's not enough.
Right.
You know, I've always had enough. I'm never satisfied, and that's what I've discovered, you know, by going to rehab and by going to...
Was it like that during your career?
No, it weren't.
Because you're a professional sportsman, you can't.
This is after my career.
Yeah.
This is when I've hit rock bottom. This is when nobody's phoning me up to go to the gym anymore. This is when my purpose is over. This is where I feel like my life's ending. It's like I've died because I've got no fight. That's what my life was. You know, when I've come to retire, I'm sat there in my big house and I'm thinking, what do I do now? What do I do next?
No, I get that.
It's like, and the eyes, what I've had and stuff in there.
The lights go down.
The lights go down and nobody learns you how to deal.
And nobody prepares you
prepares
for it afterwards.
You prepares you how to deal
I'm going to cover that part, right? But why do you think it happened? Why do you think someone attacked you?
I've just won this world title. My missus is pregnant. I sent her down the road to go to a hotel and I'm having a drink with some old Irish men who are talking to about Brendan Ingle.
Right.
And then, like, there's a Lineker's bar across the road. This young woman's come across.
Why Lineker?
Lineker. And I've just won world title. And they said, oh, Kelly, like, come across to our pub, like, have a few drinks with us and da-da-da. And, I was world title, everyone's excited, partying. Mm. And then she's like, come back to ours, me and my partner, and we're having an after party here. And I've had a few drinks and I've gone back. And like you said, you don't know what's going through someone's mind, you know, like saying...
Did you see it coming?
I didn't see this coming, you know, maybe intoxication. I didn't see this coming. I was like, oh, I wouldn't have had my leg chopped off.
Right.
You know, but when he starts saying that he's going to start talking very weird, this person, about stabbing and shooting, and I said, anyone can do that. They're a coward in my eyes. Anyone can do that. I'd stand and have a fight, like, and this is just pause. Before you know it, like, just as a blink of an eye, he's, because of these small places in Tenerife, you know, he's come back and he's grabbed this knife. And as fast as that, so you're calling me a coward, then I'm like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah.
And he's gone down to my leg and my leg going off. Just as fast as that. And then he's stood over me and I'm trying to get out of this place. And he's completely like lost his mind trying to.
Do you think you lost anything? Do you think you lost anything physically as a result of those injuries?
Who knows, you know, as in.
Well, you know yourself, don't you?
Yeah,
I think you know what levels you operate at.
Well, I got myself right. I got myself right. I could fight again.
Yeah.
You know.
You fight 9 months later, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard to tell. You know, I felt that I were back. I felt that I were back, you know.
Talk to me, Kel, about the next array of fights. Because I'm struggling to understand the direction that you're going. And I know you're going to say to me mandatories, right? But I'm looking at Jojo Dan. I'm looking at... Kevin Bizier. I'm looking at Frankie Gavin, right? With no disrespect to these guys, right? And then I'm looking at Danny Garcia, and I'm looking at Keith Thurman, and I'm looking at some of the other characters that are out and about there, Marquez. I'm looking at who's else out there, and I'm looking at you, and I'm thinking, why are you in these sort of peripheral fights that aren't going to get you huge amounts of money, aren't going to get you huge amount of exposure?
Do you think for a minute I wanted them fights? I'm world champion. Do you think I want to fight? They might be my mandatories, but who the fuck's heard of them?
Yeah.
No one's heard of them. I've got to fight them or get belt up.
Yeah.
I have to fight these fighters, you know.
What, three nondescript mandatories?
Or get belt up. That's right. How the IBF work, you know. So it's like, I didn't want to fight them.
When I saw you fight Golovkin, do you know what I felt for you? Honestly.
Tell me.
I felt fucking sorry for you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I thought? I thought, they can't sell him. They can't sell him. They can't get him the fights that perhaps he should be getting. So they're about to stick him in with Golovkin and watch him get his face fucking punched in. That doesn't mean you weren't game. It doesn't mean you didn't put up a fight, because you did.
Yeah.
But what do you think? When I say that to you, do you think like going, oh, who the fuck
looking
are you?
Back here, he's an absolute monster. But, you know, like, someone who's unbeaten. Someone's unbeaten and really believes that he can beat any man.
At middleweight.
Yeah. Even at middleweight.
14 pounds.
I just thought, you always think, you know, I'm going to box him and I'm going to keep out of the way. I'm better, you know. But as we know, it didn't go down like that.
But it done you, didn't it? It damaged you.
It damaged me.
It created a different division.
It damaged me.
Circumstances for you.
It did actually change me, that, because when I admit, when he broke my eye,
yeah,
you know, and the surgeon said, you know, it started to come to me where I think, this is just a sport, you know. I've been looking at it different, you know. I could have lost my eye. He said, mm-hmm. one more big shot and you could have been blind. And that hit home, you know.
Right.
And that hit home big time. And it actually come through me in the fight after, when I boxed Errol Spence.
Did you think in this Golovkin fight, did you go into it thinking, same as anything else, I don't give a fuck who you are, and I don't give a monkey's that I'm going up two weight classes. I'm going to win this fight, and you're just another opposition in front of me, and I'm going to do to you what I did to Sean Porter.
That was the first time that I remember being in the hotel room and I'm thinking, I'm fighting Golovkin now, tonight. Right. And I started to doubt myself, honestly did.
Did you?
I did. I thought,
on the night of the fight?
I remember on the night of the fight, with me and my nutritionist at the time, Greg Marriott, you know, and I told him, you know, I didn't say I'm going to lose, I said, you think I can win this fight, can't I? I'm going to win this
fight.
So that's straight away saying it out loud, you know, like, that's right. Negative.
Yeah, that's doubting yourself.
That's doubting myself, because, like, on the weeks coming up, you just see all I've seen is Golovkin knocking everyone out,
mm-hmm.
middleweights, and then I'm thinking, it's dawning on me that I'm fighting him in a few hours,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think a lot's in the mind, you know. Like I said, if you really believe, you know, law of attraction, if you really believe something, like I know we're going to win world title, like, you know, with everything in me, I went out and did it, you know. And I start when you're negative, that were the first time I'd lost.
The damage that Golovkin does to you, did you know the moment it hit you that was a real problem for you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did. I just knew something terrible had happened.
Right.
It was like a crab claw being crushed. Like I could hear it, I could feel it.
Right.
You know, the adrenaline's running. But I could actually feel, like, I knew something wasn't right.
Different level of pain.
It weren't really so much the pain. It was what it did to me. Like my vision.
Right.
Yeah, and I know something I'd see. Like,
this completely discombobulates you and takes you out of control of you.
Yeah.
Does it frighten? Is it frightening?
It's frightening. Of course it's frightening when you've got someone who's
got that kind of power.
Got that kind of power coming to.
And you've got more coming.
To it, a wounded animal. You know, it's scary.
So you lose. This is the first loss you've had. All right. What's the psychological effect on you? Does it get diminished? Does the psychological damage that losing your first fight has as a fighter get reduced by the fact, well, hang on, I went up two weight classes? Or is there a big impact? Irrespective.
It was still a big impact, but right. The second loss, when we get to that, that were the real loss for me.
Right.
I think that because I probably, it wasn't as bad because you were a unified middleweight beast, or middleweights won't even fight, and I think that took a little bit off it. But I still lost, and I was still absolutely devastated. But what really destroyed me were the Errol Spence loss.
Mm. If you hadn't fought Golovkin, do you think you would have been in a better position to have beaten Spence?
100%.
Right.
So
the damage that the Golovkin fight did to you was quite significant, wasn't it?
It were, but on top of that, don't forget I didn't have to make 147, I had to make middleweight to start with. So
you've got to get back down again.
So after that fight, I went middleweight, and then on top of that fight, I've had I've had my eyes broken, then I've gone away with my family. I'm eating on top of a stone above my weight to start with. And with that fight seemed to have come, like, even with my manager, he was like, give the title up. Eddie said to me, you can give the title up.
To what end? What would that do for you?
Because of the time I had to make this fight and the weight and the condition I were in.
So you'd vacate?
This would have given me different kinds of options.
Your reaction would have been no.
Absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely.
I've earned this title.
I've earned this
title. I'm going to defend it, and this is a big fight.
You've got to kill me, yeah.
Yeah.
To take this.
Yeah. And it's in your hometown.
And I put all this weight on, and then I'm dragging all this weight back off me. The training camp were terrible. I wanted to be away from Sheffield and just be completely and utterly focused on this fight.
And were you away from Sheffield?
No.
So if you wanted to be away from Sheffield, why weren't you?
Because it was like having problems with my trainer, you know, getting things, you know, he had personal problems and everything was wrong. But I got to the fight, we were getting close to the fight, and we had my dad and everyone, you know, saying, you need to pull out of this fight.
Right.
You need to pull out, but, you know, the fighter and selling all these tickets and training and in my own mind, I'm thinking,
I've got a fight, I'm going to make this weight,
you know, mm-hmm. I'm a fighter. You know, but looking back, that would be one fight that I wish that I would have pulled out of and extended the fight.
Yeah. You just mentioned a moment ago about the effect that this fight has on you. You can live with the Golovkin loss.
Yeah.
This one kicks you right up the arse because this is the belt.
This is my weight.
I suspect you probably know that you weren't in the best condition going into this fight, so you're probably cross with yourself as well.
Yeah.
Does this start a spiral for you to some extent? I mean, you lose this title. Is this the starting of certain thought processes in your head about where you are and what you're doing in your life? Or is it just a fight that you're very unhappy that you've lost? It creates a negative reaction in you, but you're able to come back from.
You know, I didn't know. I did question myself after that fight. Am I really good enough? You know, what started to think, shall I retire? You know, I hit a really low point in my life, you know, in my career.
You know, what, you're 29, 30?
Around that age, yeah.
Yeah, still very young then.
I just thought, you know, losing him in my weight category, you know, against him. You know, it's obviously another thing to swallow when you believe in yourself and you're a world champion. You know, you're at my lowest part of my career at that time.
You come back, you get yourself together, and you're now landing eventually, relatively shortly afterwards, against Terence Crawford. And now what we know about Crawford and Errol Spence and the perception of two of them being two of the greatest pound for pounds at their time. Crawford's obviously just done a number on Spence recently.
Yeah.
And we'd seen Crawford come over here and no one had quite really understood, and Ricky Burns had got done up like a kipper by Crawford, and everyone's seen this. You go in against Crawford. Now, this is a much more difficult fight for you. Mm. Is this, I mean, I'll be blunt, Kel, is this levels? You're in this fight at this stage in your career. I'm being blunt, right? You might not like
not
it.
Not levels at all.
Because yeah. this is a one-sided fight. You have a little bit.
I don't know if it's one-sided, is it? What do you mean by one? You tell me how you think it's one-sided.
Every
round you think it's one-sided and what?
Well, there weren't that many rounds, were there?
There weren't that many rounds, but I was just totally outclassed from round one.
I think there was a level in that fight. Now, I'm not suggesting that Kell Brook in his pomp couldn't be at that level. I'm suggesting Kell Brook, that's gotten beaten up by Gennady Golovkin, that's got damage done to him by Errol Spence, is not the Kell Brook that beat Sean Porter. Mm. And that puts Kell Brook into difficulty when you're fighting someone of the calibre of Terence Crawford. You had to be on your A game.
I did have to be on my A game.
Tell me about the fight then? As opposed to my little analysis, which you know better than me, because you were there.
Yeah, I were there, definitely there. We're in lockdown, aren't we? We're in lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
I had a trainer, I'd never trained with before, who spoke very little English.
Well, that was a useful decision, wasn't it?
Well, I know.
Did you make that choice for them?
Well, it were lockdown, not like I had to... Dominic wouldn't go away to Spain because he didn't know if he were going to get back. And we all know how bad lockdown were.
Yeah.
So I had to just deal with the situation, what I could, how I could, you know. Of course, as we know now, he's, we'd have to put Terence Crawford down as one of the best fighters
yep.
at this current in current yep. state of boxing. I felt like he were like a surgeon. I don't like. Don't forget when you're dealing with fighters, what a champion's like.
Mm-hmm.
It's not nice to hear you say that you think he's levels above, like levels like I'm at my level,
not like, per se.
But I'm just saying to you, but he were an unbelievable yeah. fighter, as we know. You know, I felt yeah. that I, you know, I'd, but he's that good. He's southpaw, he's orthodox. He caught me with a shot. It's never happened in my career. You know, I got caught with a shot. You know. If I had a better preparation, if I were my original trainer, if I'd done things differently, we don't know. I'm always going to say that, you know, I can beat any fighter, yeah, but this guy's a very special fighter.
Yeah.
He walked out first round in as a southpaw, and he's an awful lot. He can switch it. He's like Ronnie O'Sullivan in snooker. He's the bollocks.
Yeah.
You know, and this is the war against, you know. Yeah. And
so we're not really, then we're splitting hairs, aren't we? Because you're saying he's a very special fighter.
He's a very special fighter.
I'm saying it's level. Fighter. You are. I didn't say you weren't. Right? But you're bristling at me suggesting that there's levels. And I'm just curious why you'd bristle, because by your own admission, maybe it's because you have the right to say it and I don't.
Yeah. It's just hearing it like, because I'm a winner. And just hearing someone saying that, like, it's beneath me, it's just hard to hear, but, like...
I didn't say that.
I know you didn't say that. But it's like...
I didn't mean that.
Your levels, like, you know...
In that fight.
I don't like that. Well, I don't like to hear it.
I couldn't do what you do, so it doesn't... I promise you, mate, it doesn't come from a position of disrespect. It just comes from a blunt assessment that you can have a different view on, and we can all disagree. You know what went on.
I like.
Okay, we land in the Amir Khan space. After years of calling him out, or let's say other people suggesting it, right? But I've heard you calling him out as well, right? This fight gets made and it catches the public's imagination. You talked about not particularly resenting other fighters, or not being resentful, or not having a particular distaste or dislike for anybody that you've been in a ring for. This dynamic is slightly different, isn't it?
It is.
Tell me about it.
When people say I hate him, or I just hated that he kept, because it was just bugging me wherever I went. People always brought it up. That was just the thing to say when you're finding me. I can't, you know. I was sick of it. I was sick of that. I couldn't provide that fight for him, and it wasn't my fault. It were.
Do you think he ducked you?
I think 100% ducked me.
Why do you think he ducked you?
Because I just think that. It's different when you lose to like Canelo or abroad to like, or Manny Pacquiao, that, you know, you can say, well, at least, you know, but
if you lose a domestic fight to one of your own,
when you domestic fight, you know that there's a lot more pressure and it's hard to deal with, and I think that I don't think he's scared. He's not scared of me, but he's scared of that
right.
He's scared of that.
Right. Yeah. And some of the things that were said over the years about what he did and didn't do to you at the early stages of when you met one another in gyms and how he schooled you, that just fueled it a little bit and irritated you?
It just fueled it. You know, it's just, it were a big build-up for many years. Mm. Many years. And we eventually did get there. And what I loved about the fight, and, like, everyone's got their own opinion, like, even you.
I did, yeah. And
like,
I was wrong.
You were wrong. I was. You know, and like,
you told me.
And I like it, because that was a fight where people really did have his 50-50.
They did.
Like, you were on his side. Like, it was like that.
Yeah.
And that's what made the fight so interesting and appealing for the fans. Even though I knew.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
I knew.
Yeah, you knew. Okay. I knew. All right. Because I remember saying to you, you talked to me on the radio, and I said... Because most people are cowards, they don't say what they really think. And when they've got the guy that's in front of them, they go, oh, yeah, no, I think it'd be you, mate. And then behind closed doors, goes, no, it's not going to be him. I said to you, I think he beats you. I think speed. And you said, yeah, you don't know what you're talking about. Timing beats speed.
And it did.
But do you know when I knew that I was absolutely wrong?
When you think shape of me.
When I saw you on the stand. And I saw you at the weigh-in. And I saw Khan, who looked like he'd shit himself, with due respect to Amir.
I'd never trained for a fight like I did for that because.
Why?
Because
you fought world titles.
I know, but I don't. I think it was because I know that I've boxed all these world. I've boxed Sean Porter and but I will be remembered for that fight. Amir Khan, and he's got to live for the rest of his life knowing that he got beat off me,
right.
And that will. I just wanted to put 100% in that fight.
Right.
So if I did come up short, I did absolutely. There's not there'd be anything I can question.
No excuses.
There's no excuses. Yeah. You know, he's a better man. But I knew that I were a better fighter. I knew that timing beat speed. All I needed to do is put that effort in, which I did. And you can see in the condition I were in, how seriously I took that training camp.
No, I saw you. I saw you on the stage.
It was the one-sided beatdown. You know,
it was a one-sided beatdown.
Because that's what I visioned.
Yeah. Do you regret that fight didn't happen in your prime? Both of you?
Of course I did, you know, because you were both world champions at the same time. You know, it would have been a much bigger fight. It would have been the same outcome.
Mm.
It would have been the same outcome. Probably even quicker.
Yeah, okay.
Changing gloves in rings.
Well, I was going to ask
changing
you
gloves in. Because I was when have you seen that? Changing gloves. Well, knocking on my door at 3 or 4 in the morning.
Because wasn't it about the fact you had feather gloves, which are puncher's gloves, and he didn't like that?
Yeah, but like Robert Smith signed him off, it were perfect. Yeah, you know the story.
Yeah.
He did everything.
Did you think there was the perception that he wasn't going to come out of the dressing room?
That's what they were saying to me. Yeah. Like Robert Smith, and they're all panicking.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm just going with it, you know. But my dad said, listen, you've got to change them gloves. We're not going to get paid.
Yeah.
We're not going to get paid unless you change them.
It's disappointing to see him tested positive.
Yeah.
But does it lessen your view of him?
No. You know, I've got respect for him. Yeah, Khan. Listen, I'm being honest. You know,
but you must have a strong view about drugs in sport and all that's going on with it. So how can it not lessen
you? No, I'm just saying, are you on about this? I thought you said, how do I feel with it? With Amir Khan, nah.
Yeah, well, no.
But I'm not about this.
Amir Khan is now in the category. Yeah. Sorry, Amir.
Yeah.
In the category of being categorised as a drugs cheat.
Yeah.
The sport's eating itself in problems with this scenario. Someone's eventually going to get hurt from this.
Yeah.
It must. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you must look at it and go, well, that's not admirable, is it?
Well, it's still, even having that him failing, but I honestly, truly believe in my heart that he did have no idea that were in his system. The reason being is because I can remember the beginning of this training, like, start a negotiation for this, that he made it,
for
testing.
Yeah,
we got tested that many times, and nothing ever come back, and I think that with this particular drug, with what I know about it, that you need to have it over a long period of time to get the benefit or whatever. We're both getting tested so regular up to the fight, you know, and this were on the fight night. So it doesn't have any metabolic benefit. It doesn't have any benefit to me. Mm. So that's the reason why.
Right. I think you're very generous in that respect.
Just being honest, yeah.
Fair enough to you. You know, what I'm going to ask you. I'm going to ask you about the episode with cocaine. I've got to ask you. The first question is not about the manner in which you did it. Who the fuck have you got around you that you're in a situation where people are taking camera films? I mean, I'm not condoning the fact you did in the first place, but I'm not here to judge you about recreational drugs. You're a big boy. You take your own responsibilities. Right? But who have you got around you? This seems to be a common theme that you're in situations at 21, at 28, at 36, that people aren't around you, looking out for you and looking after you and saying, whoa, Kel, You're doing a line of coke over there, and someone's filming you.
I know. You know, obviously, it's best thing to have happened to me. You know what happened after, when I've got myself right. But having someone who I've been very close with for a long time, and it were his brother. You know, who filmed me without mentioning.
Oh, lovely.
You know, coming bringing him to my home, thinking, you know, to just me and him, like, and he just shows you, you know, he thinks, you know, got love for you, and they clearly aren't, you know, and he's gone out and filmed me, you know, when I'm at the lowest part of my life, when I'm just in such a bad, dark place, and he's done that to me, and sold it to papers.
Do people not see besides your immediate family, that will struggle with what you're dealing with as well, because they're on the receiving end of perhaps some of the way you feel about the world. But could not people not around you, important people, people that have been in your life, people that have been influential in your life, could they not see the challenges that were coming your way, or you just won't listen?
Probably a mixture of both. Probably a mixture of both. I won't listen, because it's a feeling, you know, it's a feeling I have. And, you know, sometimes with young kids, when the older generation are talking to them, because they know better.
Yeah.
Because in one ear and out the other, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just, it's been a part of my life, but, you know, I'm not.
How are you now?
I'm a shit.
How are you now?
I'm very good now. I'm in a good place. I'm happy in sobriety, and
right.
I feel so. I have a lot better relationship with my family, my children. Yeah. You know,
because the important things in life.
The important things in life. We've got total. I'm utterly connected. You know, and I'm in a very good place.
So, with that in mind, what's going on with you? I'm hearing. Connor Benn, Chris Eubank Jr.
Well, I'm getting a bit bored, aren't I?
Right, okay.
I'm getting a bit bored, and I'm thinking, you know, it's, you know, I didn't know what it would like to retire, but listen, it's, I just look at these fighters now and I just think, you know, I can beat these guys. And like, just that, I love a challenge. I love competition. I love getting myself in good shape. I love the diet, I love the hard training, I love the hard spars. I love it when people like yourself don't think I can win a fight, and I go out.
Well, I was wrong, right?
Well,
I was
wrong. That's what
and
I mean.
I'm quite happy to cough to it.
Well, I love
could
that.
Not, could I?
Yeah, I love that. You know, I love it, and I just love that. I love that challenge. Love that challenge, and you know, I'm retired, but you know, I could come back for them kind of fights.
If you're confronted, I mean, you say you're retired, you say you're together now, which I'm pleased to hear, and you know you're coping with the reality of no longer being a fighter, and being able to balance that off against the challenges that you have when fighting finishes. But you leave it with a but, which is, if these fights could be made, Kell Brook is a name, yeah. Kell Brook sells, Kell Brook and Khan filled an auditorium.
Yeah,
I would imagine that Kell Brook and Chris Eubank Jr. would fill an auditorium, or Conor Bennett, your old welterweight. If one of these fights, if the fights were in the mix, which one would you like to have? And realistically speaking, is it something that you think could happen?
Probably realistically, I'd prefer to fight Chris Eubank.
Would you?
Just because
it's easier than the weight for you.
No, it's not easier the weight. It's just I just don't like him.
Do you not?
He's so arrogant, and I'd get through a training camp a lot easier because I'd be fueled to just, you know, as in.
Do you think he's arrogant?
Cause I think he's arrogant.
What's arrogant about?
It's something about him what goes through me. Just the way he is, it's fucking.
Is it because
he just grinds at me so bad? He's just. I don't know if it's because he's smarter than me, I don't know. But he can sell himself very good.
He does do that, fair enough, he's
got something, like, but I just don't like the kid. There's something, honestly, I dislike him more than Amir Khan.
Really?
I swear to you. There's something about the kid, honestly.
Does it start from him saying you quit? Or is it just because you don't like the fact of what he says and what he does?
It's just what he does in areas, and He's just something about him. How he comes across is just horrible.
Do you think that fight can be made?
Yeah.
You do?
I think it could be made, you know. I'm willing to fight, you know. Let's just see what can come from it. You've heard it here.
Well, I'd like to see it.
And I'd like to beat him up.
And I have to be honest, Kel, I'd like to see you beat him up as well.
Well, I'm happy about that. But
listen, anyway, Kel, I've really enjoyed speaking to you. You've been very upfront, and thank you for joining me on Upfront.
Thank you, Sam.
Well done, mate. Upfront with me, Simon Jordan, is brought to you by William Hill. Future episodes can be found on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. 18+, please gamble responsibly.